Today's slice of Serie A magic is all about Parma, the little town that brought us one of Calcio's biggest miracles. As in the home of hard cheese, a footballing empire was built on milk that then went sour. Little town on the banks of the River Parma, famous for its cheese and its ham, famous too in Italy for its extremely high quality of life, Italy's top financial newspaper regularly naming it either as the number one place to live or in the top three. Small population, about 170,000, sober professional folk, and they like to ride bicycles. And it was here, in these unprepossessing surroundings, you might think, that one of the biggest surprises of the 90s came about, and it was Parma.
Parma much more settled, so many internationals in their sight, and in their attacking areas they really have their major stars. Zola, one of the very best Italians, Brolin, one of Sweden's outstanding players, and then right at the sharp end, the spectacular Asprilla from Colombia.
Gabriele Marcotti and James Horncastle are with us today. How on earth, in the home of Verdi, and if you like, Stendhal, how on earth did they get to have a side that was ranked as one of the best in Europe?
Sorry, can we just rattle off more fun facts about Parma? Because this really is the greatest place.
You're not entirely objective, Gabriele Marcotti, because your father grew up there.
Yes.
Your mother is from there to the extent that we think she might be related to one of the protagonists of this story.
She might only be there going back several hundred years. We're not sure. I think any objective, sane person would say that, along with possibly Modena, it is the culinary capital of Italy, yes?
Yeah, no argument. And possibly Bologna? Europe, shall we say?
Bologna? No?
Bologna, no, come on. Do you have the tortelli d'erbetta? Anolini, the torta fritta. I mean, there's a whole level. The one thing, and Parma, incidentally, is a fantastic sporting tradition, is a powerhouse in baseball. I think they've won more European championships than any other. Volleyball as well, for many years. The only thing that, you know, God gave Parma so much, that it also gave Parma, I think, possibly the most horrendous climate in Europe, in that in winter it's cold and it's uber foggy every single day. And in winter, it's impossibly hot and really, really humid and stuffy. But other than that, Parma really is the land of everything.
It was even the land of Faustino Sprilia, which was quite a sight to see him wandering down Viali Fratti or whichever bit he was heading down. But that was the kind of thing you used to see in the 90s. Him, Stoichkov, Zola, Crespo, Chiesa.
And I would say probably only in the 90s now as well, because Parma up until then had never been in the top flight. This is what makes their story so remarkable, is that they got up for the first time in 1990, and it wasn't like they won the second division either. They came through a playoff, they'd finished fourth, and yet for that side to then basically in their first ever inaugural year in the top flight to finish fifth, and every year kind of do better, go to cup final after cup final after cup final, is pretty extraordinary, really.
So the first year up, as you say, they finish fifth. The second year, they win the Coppa Italia against Juventus. Crazy. So two men, we've talked about some of the players who arrive, and we'll go into greater depth, but two men are key here. In previous Galatasaray, we mentioned Arrigo Sacchi, the fact that he was at Parma when they were in the third division, and they famously knocked Milan out of the Coppa Italia. Zdenek Zeman, who replaced him, but only lasted seven games. But Nevio Scala, who I think came from a farming background. Is that right?
Yeah, so, you know, sometimes people, like managers, kind of revel in their image a little bit too much in their private life. And because we like our characters, we tend to exaggerate this a little bit. Whereas, in fact, you know, most of them all wear designer clothes and live in, you know, luxury mansions. But Nevio Scala really did live on a farm. And when he was unemployed, he would go back to his farm and he would clear brush and he would work the field.
He had a past as a footballer, no? With Milan.
Yeah. But this was, he really bought into it to a degree that, in fact, I can remember not once, but twice that I called him over the years for various reasons. And he answers the phone and you can hear stuff in the background. He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm just in the field." Right? No, it was. I think once I heard him, like, he's like shouting over the tractor. He had this sort of folksy country image that, well, there's no pressure here, there's no big deal, one way or another, we'll sort it out. In reality, I think he had a really strong unit, and that's why they did well. They picked players at the right time, like Groen and Brolin and Tafarel, of course, who was, you know, people, he's obviously a Brazilian goalkeeping legend. The fact that he landed in Parma, I think, just blew everybody away at the time. But I think what kept Parma going after that was loads and loads of money.
Well, the other man. Yeah, Calisto Tanzi, your second cousin, we think, probably.
But so that first team is a very humble team, no? With a very Italian core. Yeah, as Gab mentioned, you only had, what, two or three foreign players.
We had Thomas Brolin, who I think now people have a chuckle about, but actually was a brilliant centre-forward.
Yeah, and was part of that Sweden side that in 94 reached the semi-finals of the World Cup. Now on the World Poker Tour, likes to do barbecues in his apron with nothing else on.
Damn.
Famous for, was it Leeds or was it Palace? He scored a goal in a kind of Chicharito way where it kind of just, he fell over and it smacked his face and went in. Yeah. Great. Yeah, I mean, he has become a figure of fun, but in those days, you know, he was a pretty special player.
Right. You had Sandro Melli, who was the other striker.
Yeah. And I think the guys who got them up through the playoffs were also the guys who scored in that first Coppa Italia final. Mm. Was it Melli and Ozio as well?
Il Sindaco. Yeah. So Marco Ozio, who basically looked, you know, the cover of Let It Be, where you got Paul McCartney there with the beard and full long hair, James Horncastle mode.
That's why I loved this guy. Yeah, but there is a great Ozio story about when they came here for the Winners' Cup. Because he almost missed the final because he was at Tower Records buying...
I was with him at Tower Records.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. So he was buying, like, The Cure and...
No, he was quite excited by Depeche Mode, actually.
Oh, yeah? Well,
yeah, Walking in Your Shoes was the track was... That was the big cut at the time. And, Walking in My Shoes, rather. But we're not here to talk about the mode.
And there was no Spotify back then, right?
No.
So Marco Ozio had to physically go to Tower Records.
Yeah, because he's in Piccadilly Parma. Circus. They don't have a record store in Parma.
No, they do, but it only sells opera. Because what we didn't mention is that Parma is also the opera capital of the universe, as well as home to Giuseppe Verdi, the by far the greatest non-Teutonic composer in history.
Right. To the strains
of, I'm not going to argue with that, Gap.
Triumphant march, Parma still take the field to this day. Now, all right, so you've got this town that doesn't seem like a hotbed of football fans at all, but with a strong sporting tradition. Nevio Scala, a very, very down-to-earth, quite literally, manager with very big hands, and a homegrown group of players with one or two key arrivals like Tafarel and Thomas Brolin.
Can you say something about Nevio Scala?
Uh-huh.
He makes Carlo Ancelotti seem metrosexual.
There you go.
Another thing about Carlo Ancelotti, who would obviously later become a Parma manager.
And of course was from Parma.
Yeah, David Beckham said the best dinner he ever had in his life was Carlo Ancelotti basically stopping by Parma. I think Milan had played there one day when Beckham was there on loan or whatever. And they went for all the great dishes that Gab mentioned. And he was like, you know, it left quite the mark on the Bex.
Yeah. Well, you do eat sensationally well there. If you were in Parma for a meal, where would you go, Gab?
There's a place I think it's called La Ruota, which is in the, it's sort of in the not so nice bit, in the industrial bit, sort of on the outskirts of town. But, it's, you know, it's a place where I think it was like 12 euros and you can, you know, you've got three courses and, you know, you've got very limited options of what you can order. But
Everything's good.
Everything's good. Yeah, I mean, everything's good in that part of the world. They're incapable of screwing things up, you know.
You're Calisto Tanzi.
I don't think that's where David Beckham ate with Carletto, though.
No?
I somehow don't believe that.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, returning swiftly to 1993, having won the Coppa Italia, having become a force, much everyone's surprised, out of nowhere, the team that people were calling the happy island of Italian football, a sport riven by, as you previously mentioned, Gabriele, campanilismo, the regional jealousies.
As I mentioned last week.
Exactly, yeah. This was very much a safe zone almost, where everyone was smiling, everyone was happy. There were none of the usual stresses. There were It was an example of how football could be if it wasn't for all the rage and bitterness elsewhere. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people took Palmer on as their second team.
Yeah, I mean, they really captured the imagination. One of the things that helped them in this country as well is that, you know, people think of Palmer as part of the Italian football furniture when, as I mentioned, you know, they were not in Serie A until 1990. And yet people now can't think of Serie A or Serie A without a team like Palmer in it, because they made such a big impact.
Absolutely. And in 1993, at the end of our first season doing Italian football on Channel 4, where were Palmer? They were in London, going to Tower Records and playing in the Cup Winners' Cup final at Wembley against Antwerp. Slightly fortuitous choice of opponent there, I think. Cup Winners' Cup, younger listeners may not recall, was one of three European Cup competitions, and I think very much the third in pecking order, but still huge occasion for them to get to this final at Wembley, which they were all suitably agog about. And they went on a big tour of London, saw all the sights, trained in Hyde Park, did all the things, and were absolutely delighted to be there. And we're even more delighted once the game got underway.
Alza il pallone Stojanovic, Minotti, e la palla in rete! Ha segnato il Parma! Dopo quasi 9 minuti di gioco con Minotti, Parma 1, Anversa 0. Il cross di sinistro, Melli di testa! Sul 2-1 contro l'Anversa. Adesso prova l'inserimento, posizione regolare, Cuoghi. Attenzione, Cuoghi in area, il tiro ed è gol!
Sì.
La rete da parte del Parma che probabilmente vince.
Parma have won. A real footballing fairy tale. Astonishing rise from Italy's third division to a major European trophy in a span of only 7 years.
È il momento storico in cui Minotti alza la Coppa delle Coppe.
Palmer's win, very popular in Italy and should be appreciated all around the world, really. Their rise will appeal to the romantic nature of all football lovers.
Lorenzo Minotti, the captain and homegrown, the figurehead, really, of that early incarnation of Palmer, opening the scoring there at Wembley.
Yeah, Minotti was, I think, the original sort of, before they switched to three at the back, the original Parma back line was Minotti and Apolloni were the centre halves.
But then Scala introduces the three in the wing backs, and you had tremendously exciting style of play.
But it's also because he signed this Belgian midfielder named Georges Groen, who was painfully slow, but, you know, he could put the ball on a dime. And he said, all right, you go back here. I've got Minotti who can pass, and I've got you who can pass, and I've got Apolloni who can kick people up in the air. So you guys are going to be my back three, and it's going to work great.
And you have Di Chiara on one side and Ben Arrivo on the other, bombing up and down the wings.
Ben Arrivo, nominative determinism there, no?
Yeah, nice.
So, and then Zorato in midfield.
Oh, yeah, a tiny little fella.
Yeah, who was a captain, sort of a little, sort of prototypical, sort of country bumpkin version of Dennis Wise. Of course, he's much more of a big city boy.
But he was the soul of that side now. I remember their 100-year anniversary thing. You know, it was a big deal for Zorato to be there and kind of like just mentioned that final. Remember, there are a lot of clubs that are well-established clubs, huge Italian clubs who had to wait years to get to a European final. And Palmer did it in what, this second ever top-flight season, second or third top-flight season.
And this is before the money really kicked in.
And that's what I was about to say about Zorato, is that he started to basically complain that they were getting away from what they were about, you know, that they were this kind of hard-working, kind of blue-collar side, really. And then all of a sudden the money comes flooding in, and these players that they acquire, you know, some real kind of extrovert, flamboyant players like Big Tino
Asprilia, who was famous for many things at Parma. First of all, ending Milan's unbeaten run. You remember Capello's Milan at this point were looking to go through the whole season without losing a single game. But I think one ball upfield from their tiny goalkeeper, Parma had Luca Bucci. This was after Taffarel had gone. I think it was a straight punt upfield that Asprilia gets on the end of and burns Milan's infamous back, or famous rather, back line for a famous 1-0 win at San Siro. He then had a very highly publicised affair with a local porn star Petra.
Petra Scharbak.
Funny how that name sticks with both of us. And yeah, he brought a certain colour to a town that is fairly grey, as you point out, most of the year round.
Yeah.
Well, Michael Ozio tells a story about that he used to like to party as well, but he didn't drink, he didn't smoke, but, you know.
To copulate? Is that what you're saying?
Something along those lines. And they were out until like 2 in the morning, and Ozio says, look, we've got to get to training tomorrow. Let's be responsible. Let's go home. And they drive home, and there's another teammate with them. They play Esprit, just drop us here. It was outside Esprit's house, and we'll walk the rest of the way. And Esprit like makes a show of kind of putting his car in the garage, and the two of them know what's going to happen and say, how long do you reckon it is until we see that car basically pull out the drive again? And just as they were saying it, it happened, and Tino is gone.
You had Esprilia there. You had Dino Baggio, who came in from Juventus, to give you an idea of the spending power that suddenly this side had. Cannavaro came with Massimo Crippa, who's kind of very nearly nominative determinism there, yeah. Because that a brutal player to come up against, I would imagine. Later on, Chiesa, Crespo, of course, Stoichkov mentioned, Lilian Thuram, Veron, and Gianfranco Zola. Have I missed somebody out? I mean, it's an astonishing lineup for this tiny little town. No, but for a tiny little town, this was the era of the Seven Sisters, seven clubs who could reasonably claim a role in the title race at the start of the season. But Parma genuinely could, and there was one season, 94-95, when they were Juve's rivals in everything, Coppa Italia, UEFA Cup, which they actually beat Juve to. Estaba en la Serie B, el equivalente a la Segunda División Española. Final del partido, el Parma campeón de la Copa de la UEFA. El gol de Dino Baggio al minuto 9 de la represa, después de una perfecta asistencia. I think that was the third year in a row that was an all-Italian UEFA Cup final as well, wasn't it? Yeah. Two-legged affair.
Dino Baggio, I think, scored in both legs.
Right, against his old side, right. Side, yeah. And, of course, they're rivals for the title, which they never, ever won, Parma, but they did get a second place once.
Did you neglect to mention their probably most famous academy product?
After Gianluigi Minotti. Buffon?
Yeah. After Minotti.
You're absolutely right, I did. He played for Parma.
Did he have
at 17.
Forgettable debut. Yeah.
Well, we've talked about this before here on Galazzo, but famously, when Milan come to town and Bucci's indisposed, Nevio Scala decides to go homegrown and tells a 17-year-old kid that he's going to be up against the greatest side in the world. The following day, he lets them know a day in advance, and Buffon comes out and does an absolute blinder, and thus the legend is born, a legend that still hasn't quite seen the sun go down on it.
No.
That doesn't sound right in English. A legend that still hasn't quite tramontato. Yeah. Well, you know, if we're going to start firing names around, how about Mr. Cazzo himself, Alberto Malassani? Ancelotti, who arrived later, but even after Scala had been dispensed with, Ancelotti comes in, and then arguably, what I find surprising looking back is one of their greatest years, possibly their greatest season ever, comes with not Ancelotti or Nevio Scala at the helm, but Alberto Malassani.
He's another guy who loves to be in the countryside, no? He's like in his vineyard.
I thought he liked selling photocopiers.
He likes wine.
Yeah, he likes wine.
Okay.
He likes
but he was a former photocopying equipment traveling salesman.
Yeah, they kind of over-egged that, yes. Okay. He used to work for Canon, okay?
Okay, yeah.
And that took him to trips. I feel bad for Malassani.
I like him.
I don't think he gets the respect that he deserves. Partly, and you can Google this, Google Malassani Panathinaikos, when he went to manage Panathinaikos in Greece and kind of the wheels came off. He gives this infamous press conference, which is basically just him yelling, cazzo, 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 Mr. Validoyannis, cazzo.
Happy days. But before all of that, 98-99, he was doing the business.
I thought he was a really good manager. Because he was a copier salesman, he spent a lot of time. He studied Ajax. He
copied everything that
but no, he had a lot of influences. What got him is that he was a little too
Emotional?
He's a little too emotional. Remember the time he goes under the curva and you know, he just got into it a little too much. And
how about that Parma team that Malassani had in 98-99? Undoubtedly, he was a good manager, but the squad's pretty impressive.
It's easier when you have good players, yes.
Yeah. Amongst the players at his disposal were Buffon, Lilian Thuram and Fabio Cannavaro, Roberto Cincini, Nesta Cincini, Stefano Fiore.
Yeah, one of the... I mean, there's so many Italy internationals.
And you're skipping over the fact that Ancelotti...
almost won the title.
Yeah, he finished second there.
I did say they were runners-up.
But this is quite interesting, Gab, because when Ancelotti went, Malisani was not necessarily the guy you go to next if you want to go to the next level and win the title. That guy was Capello, no?
Yeah, and so this is a story of Fabio Capello. And so he'd been to Real Madrid, he came back to Milan, and he was terrible. And he had the opportunity to... I think everything was almost just about done for him to manage Parma, and there was a lot of money. And as the story goes, you can imagine Fabio, Mr. Culture, big city, Madrid, Milan, and he's driving, he's crossing the bridge over Parma, and he looks around, and he's kind of like looking over his steering wheel and says, like, where is the city? Where am I? Like, I'm within the city limits, and I see cows and farm equipment. And he says, I can't possibly be here. So as the story goes, he pulls over, he pulls out his mobile phone, which, of course, being an early cell phone, was probably...
StarTAC.
And he says, I'm sorry, I just can't do it.
Uh-huh.
I can't be in a place like this. It's just not me.
Right.
And he disappears, which is also kind of funny when you consider where Fabio Capello grew up. It's not like you're Mr. Urbane Cosmopolitan. Yeah. You grew up in the freaking sticks. You're practically Slovenian, okay? So please don't be putting down Parma. You want to talk culture? What culture do you have in Friuli, right? Bunch of drunks. I don't mean in a negative way. They have their culture. That's great, right?
Good wine.
But you don't belong in Parma. Nothing about Parma. And Fabio, if you're listening, I'm saying in jest.
It worked out pretty well with Alberto Malassani in his shorts with his exuberant touchline antics.
What a goal by Chiesa in that final, though.
Oh, brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Actually, no, the Chiesa one's the third one, the side foot. No, it's Crespo who does the cheeky dink after robbing the ball off one of the Marseille... it's Laurent Blanc. Yeah. Laurent Blanc is slow, I know, but stay with me. He's slow on, and Crespo nips in, takes the ball and just dinks the keeper. And I think that's the first goal in a 3-0 defeat of Marseille in that UEFA Cup final. Parma's third European title in the space of what? 5 years?
I think that was the last time that an Italian team won the UEFA Cup as well. Which is a long time ago now.
All right. But then the clock struck midnight and they turned into a pumpkin.
Listeners, if you want to combine your knowledge of the footy with your knowledge of the footsie, then you need to get yourself over to the football stock market, Football Index. Football Index is a new way to profit from your knowledge of Serie A, the Premier League, and beyond. Buy and sell players, build a portfolio, earn dividends, and sell at a profit. Because you listen to Go Lazio, you can try Football Index and trade up to £1,000 entirely risk-free. Just head to footballindex.co.uk, enter the promo code TOTALLY, and if you don't love Football Index, you'll get a full refund with their 7-day money-back guarantee. Download the app or play online at footballindex.co.uk and become a football trader today. T&Cs apply, you must be over 18, deposit required, and please trade responsibly.
Listeners, it's time to talk about shaving. It's time to talk about Harry's. Harry's have got everything you need for a high-quality shave at a better price. Their cucumber and aloe shave gel lathers into a luxurious foam, allowing their German-engineered blades to glide across your face. These blades sit in a non-slip handle with a textured grip for extra precision, and Harry's post-shave balm will leave you extra cool and fresher than ever. Because you listen to Galazzo, you can get a special Harry's trial set, including that aforementioned handle, in your choice of blue, orange or green, a 5-blade cartridge, the foamy shave gel and a travel blade cover. You'll get all of that delivered to your door for just £3.95, and it doesn't come in an envelope or a jiffy bag. It comes in a Harry's branded cardboard box. Find out more at harrys.com/Galazzo. That's Galazzo with one L and two Zs.
Lean times are around the corner for everybody, but particularly for Parma. As the new millennium dawns, it turns out that the Parmalat Empire, run by Calisto Tanzi and the Tanzi family, of which Parma had been a part, and by this point it's fair to say that the Tanzis had already made Parma a separate concern. They hadn't been using Parmalat to fund their football activities, but what they had been doing was siphoning vast amounts out of the business, the figures around 800 million euros, and bonds that had been issued, accounts that had been published, turned out to be wildly based on incredibly spurious figures, and that essentially there was almost 15 billion black hole in Parmalat's accounts. It was Europe's biggest bankruptcy. It destroyed pension funds up and down the country. I mean, it had a massive knock-on effect, economically speaking, in Italy. But it also naturally had an impact on Parma themselves, who swiftly had to be re-established as nothing to do with Parmalat.
Mm. Yeah, it was, and it's a very sad story of straight up fraud, and also regulators and auditors who did not do their job the way they should have done. And I think clearly with Calisto Tanzi, a guy who, you know, they expanded too quickly, they needed a minor hole. It's like, oh, I know, I'll just change these numbers because I'm sure they'll be fine later on. And no, they weren't. And then you need to borrow more and you need to change more numbers. And it's, you know, it really is the worst kind of fraud in some ways, because it's not like somebody stole the money. It's not like anybody benefited. It's just a whole bunch of people got ripped off. And he preyed upon this image of Parmalat as being this global power. And they would look, because it was from Parma, it had to be good, because nothing bad ever comes from Parma. And, you know, we're such forthright people, and no, they weren't.
Mm. Well, Parma were declared insolvent in 2004, hung on several seasons in Serie A. 2008, they eventually went down, and then they came back to Serie A, but they had a succession of, can I say, crooks as their owners. And I think was Tommaso Girardi the first person to buy them out of the administrator's hands.
Mm.
That didn't work out too well. And to begin with, it did, because he got rid of Stefano Pioli, who's now Fiorentina manager, uh-huh. and brought in Claudio Ranieri for what looked like an impossible battle against relegation.
And they had Pepito Rossi, didn't they?
They
brought him from... I remember going to see that Parma side against Lazio late in the season, and I think they won that day.
They had an incredible second half of the season under the newly appointed Ranieri, who kept them up against all expectations.
Mm.
I just find it difficult to discuss Girardi without, I mean, Stefano Tanzi, or Calisto Tanzi and his son Stefano, did some good for the city, and they made a horrible mistake and they need to be rightfully punished. This guy, and just Google him, just look at his face and you realize this guy is up to no good. This guy should not be allowed anywhere near a football club. He's somebody who never produced anything in his life. His parents, he inherited the money. He used his parents' name to get credit lines. And he ran roughshod over it. He got involved with people. Remember at one point, Parma had like 120 players under contract.
No more. When they went out of business, they had close to 200 players registered with them, because supposedly how they were going to prosper was getting players and loaning them out elsewhere. So there were literally hundreds of Parma players around.
But I mean, he didn't hatch his plan because he's a mental midget. He couldn't do it. But like,
Leonardi.
Yeah, people came to him and said, oh, look, how about we do this? And look, this is how we can do it. And like, any stupid idea, we found a dodgepot accountant, because in Italy, you know, you need certain bank guarantees to be able to compete for the season. And the way they did it, and I think you have to present these guarantees like every 3 months. And the way they did it in such a way that like they'd move money around, so it would like appear for like a day when they came and checked, and then it would disappear again. And it was just basically rotating debt. It was all sorts of awful, awful stuff until it came to that, you know, that final season where not only were players not getting paid, but, you mm-hmm. know, they were like chipping in to buy petrol. People were coming and like you know, the bail bondmen coming to
didn't they take the washing machine or something?
Oh,
like
they took the benches, and also remember they auctioned off everything. I mean, Malisani ended up buying the UEFA Cup, no, that he won to give it back to Pan.
I remember speaking to Hernan Crespo at the time. I was involved with a youth team, and he said it's the most humiliating thing that he's been through. And then the worst thing, of course, what does this dodgepot do? At the end, he's like, oh, that's okay. I found a buyer. No, he's this Albanian. It's always an Albanian billionaire who then never shows up because, remember, he sold it to some other doofus who had no money. Mm. And then that guy then like, oh, no, I'm going to sell it to this Albanian millionaire. But then it's not the Albanian billionaire. It's some other Albanian who's like a line cook at the diner. And then
the other guy, the last guy, is it Manetti? Is it? Oh my God!
Well, fair to say they've not had much luck with owners.
His name means handcuffs, by the way, which you know is where these people all belong.
they go bankrupt. They go down to Serie D, are we now witnessing a similarly incredible rise from the new Parma? They were refounded initially with the involvement of people like Barilla, the kind of local, you know, obviously the pasta dynasty. And also Nevio Scala, who was appointed as president, and 25% of the club was owned by fans. It was the idea there were going to be a new model of clubs. Gigi Apolloni came back as
manager. Yeah.
He was the manager. And out they come. They had two straight promotions to get out of Serie B to Serie C, the Liga Pro rather, and then into Serie B where they are at the moment. Last year, Chinese businessman Zhang Li Zhang, I may have pronounced that wrong, took a 60% majority stake in the club.
And he's the guy who owns Granada.
Is that right?
He's the guy who hired Tony Adams.
Yeah.
Is he?
Is it Le Sport?
Mm. Okay. De Sport.
He's Hernan Crespo's guy, or Hernan Crespo brought him in.
Right, so Hernan Crespo is now what, vice president at the club?
I think he has an honorary role just because he didn't really like being behind the desk, I think.
Right.
So he was fronting it in that sense, but I think he likes to do other things. Crespo is a multi-talented guy.
Now,
so.
As we record this, Parma are well placed to make it three straight promotions. They have money behind them. It's an interesting squad. How good are their prospects, do you think, of returning to Serie A and becoming real protagonists again in the top flight?
I think Parma went all in January. They brought in some guys who'd played in Serie A, who'd got other teams out, like Cicciretti from Benevento.
The poor man's Cassano.
And, of course, they've still got Alessandro Lucarelli, who doesn't play as much, but was captain when all these financial problems again manifested themselves and decided that he was going to stick around and loves to kind of rub Parma's success in Girardi's face. It's a crazy league, Serie B, because you know not too long ago the manager D'Aversa was on the brink of being sacked because they put all this money into the club in January and thought, right, we can really shore up automatic promotion. Instead, they've only now started to click for them. So they've got a good chance, but you know we've seen other teams like Frosinone, who've you know built their own kind of new Meccano Stadium, look like they're set up, basically choke in the last couple of years when they should have been getting promoted. So it's that playoff thing is quite the bucking bronco to be on.
Mm.
You only have a playoff if the third place team is it less than 10 points?
10 points.
Yeah, between the third place team and so you don't have those situations which theoretically could happen here where. Mm. You know, you've got three teams to run away with it, and it's like, you get screwed, and you get to play against, you know, the sixth place team that's 25 points behind you. But you know, they get a dodgy call, and you're out. Yeah, you know, which has happened in the past.
Well, best luck to everyone involved in the promotion race in Serie B. But it would be fantastic to see Parma back.
Mm. Yeah, no, without doubt. I think, as I said, like I think a lot of people are just used to Parma being a Serie A team, which you know, again. But
there's so many teams you want to have back and
body,
and done without them. But no, and I want Chievo gone.
Why? Luca Campadelli, why, what's the problem?
I'm just tired of these people with no fans and the guy with his stupid Harry Potter glasses and playing
the old Harry Potter
bad football every day. Like, seriously, he's like a relic to, like, all right, it was interesting at first, it's sweet, the flying donkeys, but there's one team in Verona and it's not you. And simply because the guy who owns the other
next season, it will be them.
Another, yeah, well, interesting to see where he is and whether he's got, you know, windows that he can open where he moves to next. enough, you know.
Well, Gab, tell you what, why don't we finish on less controversial?
Sorry, unless Malizani went back to Chievo. Now that would be different. That would be special.
All right, then the donkeys would truly be flying again. Those are some asses we would like to see. let's finish off, shall we, with your favourite anecdote about Parma, which, curiously, has nothing to do with football.
Oh, yes. So Parma has a tradition of being, like a lot of towns in that area, it's probably the most left-leaning part of Italy. Places like Parma, like Bologna, like Reggio Emilia. But it's also one of the wealthier parts of Italy. So you have this whole sort of idea of sort of bourgeois anti-fascism, and which is a subset that people often kind of forget actually existed. And there was a man named Italo Balbo who in 1934-35, he was like the poster boy for fascism in Italy because he flew across the Atlantic. Now, Charles Lindbergh had done it before, and then you had the Lindbergh baby and Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, and you really don't want me to digress, but that was a real travesty of justice. But Italo Balbo was famous, he was good-looking, he was handsome.
No relation to Abel Balbo, no?
To my knowledge, no relation to Abel Balbo at all. But, you know, and he was in the military, and Parma was a city that was strong anti-fascism. They couldn't go and dislodge it. So he sent Mussolini sent Italo Balbo with a company of tough men there to go and, you know, restore order, which basically meant beating up the people who caused trouble, maybe throwing some of them in jail. And he went there. He lasted a week and he was driven out of town. And there's a famous piece of graffiti in Parma by the Ghiaia, where it says Balbo ha attraversato l'Atlantico ma la Parma no. So Balbo, you may have crossed the Atlantic, but you could not cross the Parma River. So
nice.
That's it's one of the points of pride of an oft misunderstood city.
Yet another reason to love Parma. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing matches at the Tardini again. Here's hoping. James Gabrielli, many thanks for being with us today.
Pleasure.
And helping us to understand the little town of Parma a little bit better. Listeners, do hope you enjoyed that. We'll be back with another Golazzo next week. Not sure, as usual, what we'll be talking about then. We'll see what the Campionato throws up for us. For now, anyway, it's many thanks for being with us. From all of us here, it's arrivederci. Campionato di
calcio italiano. You've been listening to Golazzo, the totally Italian football show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production, and for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Listeners, around 97% of those of you who tune in to the Totally Football Show are male. But despite being more likely to be diagnosed with cancer than women, men are much less likely to ask for help, even when they need it. And that's why we've teamed up with Macmillan Cancer Support to try and put that right. Cancer can affect you emotionally as well as physically. It can affect your relationships, your work, and your confidence, so it's vital to seek support. Talking is an important part of dealing with cancer, and Macmillan wants to make men with cancer of whatever sort more aware of this so they can be honest and open with their family and loved ones. For more information or to find support, visit macmillan.org.uk. That's macmillan.org.uk.